Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Before we start the pod this week, I just want to give a push to our YouTube channel and pod providers and our socials. Make sure you are following our channels and subscribing, because there's 40% of you that watch and engage with the podcast every week and haven't subscribed. So please do press that subscribe button. It's very quick to do. It takes 2 seconds and it helps us get found by the Borough fans, helps us grow and helps us get chatted as well. But for right now, let's talk about the defeat against Sunderland. Look ahead to Watford and answer your podcast questions. This is the Borough Breakdown Podcast, and this is why Borough Match Day Chatter in a pod.
Want support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out.
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown Podcast with Johnny, Dana and Tom. We are the Borough Podcast that gives you all of your Borough Match Day chatter in a podcast. In a defeat for Borough at the Stadium at Light saw us drop down to fifth place in the championship table. The first win for Sunderland in about 11 years, and they haven't shot a bottle since. Anyway, guys, a defeat for the first time in a while in the league, but I just wonder how he's feeling after the defeat to Sunderland. Dana, how do you feel after the defeat to Sunderland?
You know what? If people are wanting emotional relatability, then I am not the person to do it, because I think after the game, I've sort of detached from it. And the biggest disappointment was in the manner of the defeat, the performance. I thought Borough were incredibly poor and I was disappointed with them. It's actually, we've gone down to sixth, which is worse than fifth. To be fair, I did feel like that was going to happen, because I said to you last night, as soon as Watford and Rotherham was full time and it was a draw and there was an open opportunity there for Borough to get into third place in the table, I just knew that we wouldn't win today because of it, because every time Borough are presented with that opportunity to jump up a place in the table, especially when we're, you know, at the upper end of the table, we always seem to trip over our own feet. And we did that today, unfortunately, but it's not the end of the world, although it does sting, because as much as we are going to get beat in football, it is part and parcel of the game. It stings that it's against Sunderland.
Lovely cliche there with part and parcel of football. Love that. Tom, how are you feeling as well?
Unlike Dana, I might be the one for emotional kind of relatability today. Yeah. At the moment, I hate football, to be honest. I'm not even like looking forward to next week yet. This is going to sting all week. Even watching the game, you know, I was on a bit of a delay, so like watching on Now TV, so I wasn't really checking my phone. But after it had gone 1-0, I mean, I was fuming about that anyway. But like, I was talking to one of my best mates who's a Sunderland fan. He's probably one of the more kind of like calm, rational Sunderland fans you're ever going to speak to as well, because we were having like quite a, you know, decent discussion on the game. There was no like taunting or anything like that. But as soon as that happened and he was just like, oh, like Hackney's playing well and stuff like that, I'm just like, oh, shut up, mate. I'm not even interested in talking about football at the moment. I said it on the, I think it was on the opposition preview show, or it might have been theirs. Like, it's, I think it's worse, you know, living in Billingham as well, because there's like quite a like large contingent of Sunderland fans here, and you just know you're going to be hearing about it all week. I've got to hear about it at work and stuff as well. So, I'm really not happy with it. The manner in which it happened as well. You know, first half, I really didn't think we were at the races today. However, went going in at 0-0, I thought, you know what, it could be worse. You know, we've had bad displays earlier in the season under Carrick, where we've gone 1-0 down at half-time, for example, and then we come back out second half, completely different team, and turn it around. That's fully what I was expecting. And then I don't feel like we ever had the chance to do that because of the shocking decision from the ref to send Dill Fry off and give a penalty, which I'm sure we'll cover in a bit anyway. But I think after that, it just kind of like really, not so much killed the game, just it did kind of ruin it though. It kind of spoiled the game for me. I think, like I said, we weren't at the races first half and they could have easily had two. If they'd have gone in 2-0 up at half time and it was 11-on-11 and we ended up losing, it's a little bit easier to take than the manner in which we did lose.
Yeah, and thanks for answering all my questions, Tom, about me even asking them. I'm joking. But no, I kind of agree with what both of you have said, really. And, you know, it's moments to find games, isn't it? And there was key moments that probably didn't go Boris' way today that, you know, see them get beat against Sunderland. But Sunderland played well. You know, it is what it is. I think they did a number on us in most points of the game today. And it's also part of the process as well, isn't it? You know, we're going to have these games where we're not going to be as good as we want us to be. You know, we're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes. Isaac Steffen passing the ball to Diallo in the first half and we nearly went 1-0 down. But I'm just going to pass that this week because I can't bother to go through it. But we'll talk about the game then, because a lot, appreciate, happened. You know, there's obviously the penalty, the missed penalty, a red card. There's a potential penalty for Borough. There's that really good finish from Diallo as well. But it does come from defining key moments and how they define games as well. And let's go from the top then, because Lenihan came back into the side for Paddy McNair, and then a Ross Stewart penalty, which was, of course, was it in or out the box? We'll come to that in a little bit later on. And then also Amad Diallo sealed the win for Sunderland. But Dana, how would you assess the performance and the defeat against Sunderland?
It was just really disappointing because Borough just didn't really get going, to be honest. And I was watching the game thinking, how much space are we allowing them? And in fairness, I think their strength is getting those players in key areas of a football match and trying to attack that space. And the movement of Clark, Roberts, Stewart and Diallo was a real problem for us. But I think our eventual defending was good. There were some good defensive moments from quite a few. Well, it was Smith, Lenihan and Fry, I noted in the first half, particularly Lenihan. But then I was thinking, okay, that's their strength, trying to attack those spaces, getting in behind, getting into the half space, working and being dangerous between the lines. What's ours? And I didn't really have an answer to that. Because every time we had the ball, we gave it away. And it was a big theme of that first half, is just really poor pass decisions, most notably from Steffen playing it out from the back, which I'm fine with. But yeah, that it was not on for him to pass to Hayden Hackney there. Of course, he does that after we spent about 15 minutes defending him last week. But it happened. It wasn't just Steffen, and it wasn't, you know, it happened all throughout that game, all over the football pitch for Borough. There was a moment in that first half where Tommy Smith could have had the ball in a really dangerous crossing area. And all it needed from Riley McGree, who was in the right half space at that point, was a very, very simple 5-yard pass into his path. It was underplayed, intercepted, Sunderland on the attack. And that just happened all throughout the game. We needed to take care of the ball better. We needed just a spell of possession. To be fair, we had a little bit of it towards the end of the first half, but what good is it when it comes at that point? You know, it should have happened about 25 minutes earlier. So that was disappointing. And then, of course, I thought, you know, I was sort of thinking at half time, much like what Tom's discussed on the pod before, when we have these first halves that aren't great, we always have the confidence that we could come back in the second half much better. And so I felt that at halftime. And I do think we came out in the second improved it with an improved sort of approach to it. And then that happened. Balls over the top were a big problem in that first half as well. Diallo tried to get in a few times and just didn't time his runs particularly well. But then it happened with Ross Stewart, who's a fantastic striker. I said on tease after the game, I truly believe he's one of the, he's in the top five number nines in the division. And he spins and then the penalty incident happens. And oh, it's frustrating, isn't it? Because as much as you can say that Borough were poor in that first half, it does knock all competitiveness out when you take, when you send a player off. And I think we'll get into it, won't we? So I'll mute my words there.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. I think we're going to come to it in just a moment. But in terms of Sunderland and how they played, and you were saying that ball over the top, and the reason why they were doing that is just to occupy as much space as you possibly can, because we've borrowed the player really high line at the moment, and they're trying to be really aggressive in the press. They're trying to get as much space away from their own goal, try and win it in key areas, and then get you on the counter attack, and then try and attack certain spaces. But it was really interesting today because Sunderland had three players on Ryan Giles. One of them was Patrick Robertson, one was Ahmed Diallo, and they tried to pin him back, and it clearly worked, because a lot of Borough's possession and play, about 50% of it came from the right-hand side today, which is very unlike Borough to see Borough do that. But then, credit to Sunderland, they try to use Giles as kind of a let's pin him back, but then also let's try to get the ball to these half space areas, and then can we spin him behind, can we try and play the ball through in this big gap in this big space. And that's how Sunderland got a bit more of a foothold in the game and gained more of an advantage, and then, you know, obviously the goal falling away, when Roberts played a lovely ball over the top, it was part of that, you know, try and get a load of bodies on the left hand side, pin Giles back, bring bodies over, create space, can you get him behind? And that's what they did, and they did it really well. But it seems, Tom, that Tony Mowbray just loves playing against Middlesbrough, because I've got a lovely stat for you. He's had 15 games as a manager against Borough. He's won 7, he's drawn 5, and he's lost 3. Why does he keep getting the better of us, Tony Mowbray? Because he seems to be our kryptonite at the moment.
Probably because he's watching us pretty much every week when he's able to. You know, I mentioned it on the What the Fog podcast when I was on there last week. Like, the day pretty much where he signed for Sunderland, me and you were in the executive box for the Swansea game, and he was there. You know, they'd only played Norwich, a couple of hours before, and we get up to our seats and Tony Mowbray's walking past us, who he's clearly like been to that game, signed his contract, shot down the A19 and straight into the Riverside for the game. So it's probably because of the amount he watches us. He probably just knows, you know, strengths and weaknesses a lot better than he would any other team.
Yeah, it's like he's the manager at the club at the minute. Do you know what I mean? Just like the amount of time he watches us, each and every season, and like, you know, I think he just knows how to put number on us and has enough like analysis in and around it to try and get the results. But this has just been happening time and time again. It doesn't matter what club he's at, he will always get the better of us, and it annoys me because I really like Tony Mowbray. I love him, but stop trying to beat us all the time. It's really annoying. Can't just give us a win just this once. Like, you know, that like you did earlier in the season when we beat you 1-0. But anyway, we'll keep talking about the game, Dana, because Borough had an interesting stat as well of the lowest pass success rate they've had under Carrick. Does it show like how wasteful we were when we did have the ball? Because, you know, obviously Sunderland did dominate possession at times. They were a bit more, you know, had a bit more foothold in the game. They made things difficult for Borough. But when we did get the ball, that low pass success percentage of 75% just shows how wasteful we were, right?
Yeah, as I said, it was a big, big theme in that game. When you just wanted Borough to calm things down, I think the commentator on SAFC TV mentioned it, that Carrick was driving home the message of just calm down. And I think Borough had completely well and truly rattled themselves in that first half, because we are a possession-dominant side, aren't we? And we usually do take care of the ball quite well. And we have been throughout the whole of the season. Even when Chris Wilder was in charge, we were a possession-based team. But it's so easy to pick us off if we don't look after the ball well. And it was actually sort of similar to the Wilder games earlier this season, where, you know, I was jumping on this podcast and saying we need to keep hold of the ball better. And it was just the pattern of the game that developed. Borough could not keep hold of the ball. And there was a really limited influence from Housen and Hackney as well, where he stepped up when we got a man sent off, Hayden Hackney. But before that, I think they were very limited because I think Sunderland did well to station their players in key areas to be able to pounce when there was an opportunity to intercept. But yeah, I think the very basic platform to win a football match is to take care of the ball when you have it, unless you're a counter-attacking team and Borough just aren't that. So I think that was probably the most disappointing thing for me, is that we shot ourselves in the foot massively, because every time we had an opportunity to try to get an attack going, we just couldn't. And then when we did, I have to point this out, our deliveries in the box were really, really poor from open play and from set pieces as well. We need to talk about Giles's corners, because they've been poor for some time, which is very, very unlike him. But it was just, it was frustrating. It was infuriating, in fact, because we are so, so much better than that.
Yeah, well, we are, you know, like it's just difficult, I think, sometimes to be and have that perfection within our game. You know, I think when we look at Giles and we know like how well he can knock the ball into the box and his delivery is, but maybe we should move him away from the corners at the moment. But then again, who would you like on it? Because it's such a wonder of a left foot, right? So it's quite difficult, and it could just be a phase of three or four bad decisions, or potentially it could be a tactical thing of not trying to not beat the first man but aim for the front post, you know, because you can get that flick on and then obviously you see someone at the back post.
But it was an awkward height though, wasn't it? It was like it was kind of above the ankle, and like, unless we have a Christian Stuani attack in the near post, which we don't, then I kind of didn't understand it. It's like, it's very, you know, football cliche, but get it in the mixer and just deliver the ball better. We know that he's capable of doing it, but I noticed it in the Wigan game, and I sort of thought, am I committing blasphemy here? Because I said to my dad, there was like two bad corners that he put into the box, and they just sailed straight out of play. I just said to my dad, is Giles broken? Because his corners have been terrible this game. And it sort of has, they haven't really improved. But I will say that, you know, Ryan Giles isn't the reason why we lost the game. You know, I think it was a collective thing. But yeah, just picking little facets of the football match, I thought that was something I noticed, that our deliveries in the box, when we got into those advantageous positions where we could have, you know, maximised our goal scoring chances, we just didn't have the quality, unfortunately, which again, I have to say, is very unlike Giles and very unlike Borough.
Tom, how do you think we can improve on those set pieces then? Do you think we should change the taker of it, maybe do more of a routine-based system where, you know, you look for the short corner and lock it in the box? How would you like us to approach him in the next couple of games?
I think for Giles's corners, that could be a shout, playing the kind of more routine based and playing it short, because it seems like in standard, like open play, other than maybe today, because I don't think his crossing was at all good today either, as well as his set pieces. Other than today, I think his delivery from open play is fantastic. He's one of the best in the division at it. So maybe it's just dead ball situations that we need to take Giles off, try and play it short, give it back to him, and you know, play a crossing from open play. On the other side of things, because if we're doing it like in the way we currently have it done, where it's in swinging on both sides, I wouldn't change anything necessarily from Housen's side, but for Giles, it does seem like he might need a little bit of help on the corners, so maybe a routine-based system is the way to go.
Okay, then. So with Borough obviously not creating many chances and the delivery's been poor, going at half-time, lucky to be drawing 0-0, but in the second half, so obviously probably the biggest moment of the game, Dale Fry brings Ross Stewart down, Sunderland are awarded a penalty. And I just want to quote Michael Carrick after the game, and then we'll go into it and what we think if it is or it isn't. Red card, not red card. But he does say, outside the box, Dale didn't deliberately bring him down. Running next to each other, Ross ended up falling down. He has the right to do it. It wasn't deliberate and it wasn't in the box. So I pulled a little graphic for us, and it shows the contact that is in or out. It's where Dale Fry does let go of Stewart, and you can potentially say, well, as he clipped the back of his heels or anything like that, but I don't think there is. But anyway, Ross Stewart goes down, and he can rightly go down as well, you know, because if you're in those positions, you try and do the best for your team and you see what happens. But going to ask you both the question. Tom, I'll go with you first, but do you think it was a penalty? Two, do you think it was in the box? And three, is it a red card?
I don't think it was a penalty because I don't think it was in the box. I think those graphics show that, I think at the very most, maybe one of Ross Stewart's toes is touching the white line, but it's after then the contact.
Doesn't that count, though, as being on the line?
I don't know. It starts outside and the contact's made outside the box. It's when his toe touches the line is when he decides to throw himself down. But, yeah, the contact's outside the box for me. I don't think there's any question of that from what I'm seeing in the images there. In terms of a red card, I feel like it probably could have been, if not incredibly soft, which I think, you know, on BBC's phone and after the match, Maddo was saying as well, very, very soft foul. I don't know from those images just how much contact there was there, maybe in a clip of the heel or something, but extremely soft. But for me, Zach Steffen should have been off his line a lot quicker to deal with that coming through. When I was watching that in real time, the camera angle was obviously on Stewart and Fry, and the ball goes quite a distance in front of Stewart. I'm thinking at the time, right, Steffen should be miles off his line at this point and coming to deal with this. And then the camera kind of like reaches Steffen and he's still there. And I'm like, what are you doing? You could have had that. So I think potentially a little bit of blame has to go to Steffen for that as well. But like I say, incredibly soft outside the box. But I think to the letter of the law, it could have been a red card.
Dana, what do you think?
I don't even think it's a foul. I honestly don't think that's a foul. I think Stewart is incredibly clever. He knows that he's maybe touched the ball a little bit too heavily in that situation. He knows that he's got a defender breathing down his neck, that the goalkeeper's coming out, albeit I agree with Tom a little bit later than he probably should have. But I don't think there's a foul there at all, because I will say there's sympathy with the officials because we watch it in slow motion. And I always think that if you've got to slow down an incident, how can you expect the officials to sort of judge it how you feel it should have been judged in real time? Because football is a quick game and that was a quick moment. But I just don't think there's a foul there. I think Carrick is spot on. They're just jostling with each other. And I think Stewart is clever and he goes down and he knows that this is giving the referee a decision to make. And I honestly think the referee has been heavily influenced by the crowd. I just don't see, I don't see the contact there. You know, they're just grappling with each other, as you would expect, centre-half, centre-forward, you're trying to keep up. And yes, Stewart's a little bit in front of Fry, but I just don't see the foul there. There's like a little motion of his leg, but I don't even think that that's it, to be honest. I just don't see the foul there for me. Is it inside or outside? Listen, it's really tight. I think it's on the line, which counts as being inside and being a penalty, but I just don't even see there's a foul there, to be honest. So, yeah, it's frustrating. And as I said, it changes the complexion of the game because, you know, we're a man sent off and Steffen does save it very awkwardly, it has to be said, because I think you said it, Johnny, that it sort of hits the side of his hand. Because I was wondering, how has he dived to his left and the ball has ended up sort of to the right? It was very strange. But I knew it was a goal, to be honest. I hate to be that person, but I can't remember the last time that a Borough goalkeeper saved a penalty. In fact, I think the last time I remember was Thomas Mahias against Ashley Young. Pretty sure there was somebody else a lot more recently than that. If anyone knows, please let us know. But yeah, I just knew that that was going in one way or another.
Yeah, like I'm the same. I didn't think it was a foul. And I also didn't think it was in the box. I also thought it was probably not a red card either. There's so many shades of opinion with this, isn't there? Yeah, and look, like, you know, it in the letter of the law, he has to go, really, in terms of Fry. You haven't got a problem with that, but I think obviously that's when the foul's been committed and the referee's blue and you're kind of like, right, okay, he's going to have to probably go. Is it a goal scoring opportunity? Obviously, that's technically a yellow in some cases now. But did he go for the ball? I mean, the ball's nowhere near the pair of them, right? So, you know, he knocks it too far ahead. It's already in Stefan's hands when the ball's already been, when he actually goes down. But the foul itself, I think, if it is a foul, is committed outside the box for me, you know, and I don't think that it's a foul in general. I think it's very, very soft, you know, and also, but these things happen in games, you know, we don't have the luxury of a VAR. I think if VAR is in play there, I don't think there's a penalty given. I think if anything, it's probably if they do bring it back, it's a free kick at the very, very most to Sunderland. But you know, it happens. Stewart takes a penalty and he hits it quite poorly. But I feel like with Stefan, he's dived so far over, which is the right thing to do. But it hits like the inside, I think just hits like the end of his right hand. And he put it, so it pushes back and obviously just falls to his feet and, you know, you're 1-0 down. But, you know, Bourke could have had a penalty as well in the last couple of minutes of the game. And I'll go back to Carrick in his post-match and he says, we should have had a penalty. There was 5 minutes to go. That's a big swing in football. 5 minutes is a long time. Two big decisions that haven't gone our way today. Tom, you know, down the red 91st minute, even... you know, Sunderland fan TV or SAF FC TV was saying it was a clumsy challenge, and you shouldn't be making those challenges in the box. I mean, given that they say it was clumsy, Borough should have had a penalty, right?
Sorry, I think I might have just lagged out for a second there, but I think you were talking.
He's
about
doing
the,
a me. Put 50p in your meter, Tom.
No, I've just Tom. Changed Wi-Fi networks quickly, but I missed the end of the question.
So Tom Green doing a Dana Moulton line. But yeah, I did say around with Sunderland fan TV and also SAF TV saying that the challenge was clumsy. And if a team of that, you know, and their commentators are saying it's a clumsy challenge in the box, surely it's a penalty, right?
Well, do you think more it was of a penalty? Penalty than the other one. At least this one was inside the box and there was actually contact. But no, you know, them saying it was clumsy and stuff, I'd kind of checked out by the time of this watching it. So even when that happened, like I did shout for a penalty, but in my mind, I'm just like, what difference is it going to make here? Because, you know, we either miss the penalty or we lose 2-1. Like, I know Carrick's kind of said, you know, 5 minutes to go, I didn't have any faith in us getting the second goal back at that point. Like I say, I checked out. I was really pessimistic at that point. But like I say, it should have been a penalty. And for me, I think the refs bottled that one about as much as he bottled the one up the other end.
You are not happy about that. But no, I think you're all right. You are right, though. Again, I didn't think there was a penalty. I thought I was. I don't really think you can have any complaints if it was given, to be honest. There's been no contact on the ball at all. If anything, there's been just a knee straight whack pums backside and he's gone down. And, you know, it's penalty. But at that stage, you know, it's already 2-0 Sunderland. It's already pretty much game over. But, you know, Borough have gone away with defeat. But let's talk about this like defeat and just in terms of how it can maybe look against Watford, because you know we've got some really big games coming up over the next few weeks. And Carrick is saying in his post match as well, like, we can't always be perfect as we want it. And we were well in the game and had 10 men and dealt with it really well. I was really pleased with the lads and how we dealt with that. And we kept our shape, looked a threat, still got on the front foot, and we can learn with it, in like the coming weeks. And that was obviously paraphrased as well. So just don't fact check me for reading out correctly because I paraphrased it. Dana, you know, obviously defeats like this, you know, we haven't had many under Carrick. You know, obviously there's one noticeable one under Brighton, but I mean, Brighton are sensational to watch, but they can make or break teams. But how do you think we can learn from this defeat and then going against Watford with full of confidence and try and get a big result, because it's a huge game, right?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more.
That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It is. I think this is just a small reminder of the improvements that Boris still have to undertake. And I think it's also a chapter of learning for Carrick as well, because that was probably the first time that I thought, this is a little bit on him here. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to wet the bed. I think we can be critical and we can critique and we could give our opinions without being too harsh or maybe too passionate within that criticism. But I did think, now I'm going to go back to the conversation that I had about the first halves, and Borough have had a few first halves that haven't been bad. I think Blackburn was maybe the closest to poor that we've had in terms of first halves, taking the Brighton game out of the equation here. But I think today we were particularly poor. Like, we were very, very poor in that first half. So I was kind of thinking, okay, they're stretching us. Why can't we stretch them now? And I was thinking, okay, Crooks not really working, but we've thought that before, haven't we? And then it's ended up working. But I did think that Cameron Archer was probably the player to come on. I was surprised there were no personnel changes at half time, but that's, I suppose, you know, Carrick has been patient before and it's worked off. So can I knock him too much for that? Absolutely not. But I just thought at half time, I was thinking, okay, get Cameron Archer on. And he's somebody that can stretch a defence because he's very good at getting in behind. And he's a finisher as well. He will cause problems, I think, if he's given more time on the pitch. So I hope to see Cameron Archer from the off in the next game. But it just serves as a reminder that, yeah, you know, we are a good team as it is right now, but we've still got a little way to go before I guess we're a fully polished and fully realised team, and we're going to get these bumps in the road. I know it's very cliche and people might not enjoy that because they're annoyed at the manner of the defeat, but it is what it is, isn't it? You know, we're going to lose games, and let's hope that this is the only game that we lose in the next couple of matches that we have. It's just really important we don't make this a run of defeats. I think that's really important that we bounce back.
Absolutely. But let's move on to probably a BTEC prayers and place this week, you know. But the prayers and place is the place. I'd like to give prayers to Tom's new haircut. I'm going to give it a shout out to Tom because I think it looks great. The Borough Breakdown shirt, which Dana is rocking, and the purple streak in her hair as well. Well, it's a bit of a BTEC prayers and place because, you know, obviously after a defeat, you don't really tend to have much praise. But Tom, is there anyone that you'd like to single out of the Borough players or coaching staff this week that deserves a bit of it?
I think this might be a first for me in the praise and place. I don't know about it overall, but Tommy Smith is probably the only one that kind of really stood out to me when I was watching the game. I thought he dealt with Jack Clark quite well. Not getting drawn into diving in to make a tackle, I thought he stood him up quite well. He was staying on his feet, and at the worst of times, at least, he was forcing Clark to go backwards, and then Force was coming back to help with the defending. So I would have to say, yeah, Tommy Smith. I don't think you lost a lot of duels against Clark, and probably kept them as quiet as they could be on that side. Although, you know, they had other threats as well, which unfortunately we didn't deal with.
Mm. Denimal, who gets your place in the praise and place?
You know what? I'm going to say Hayden Hackney for basically just stepping up when we were playing with 10 men. Yes, I know he was, I think the second goal, he shows Diallo on the inside, which is always pretty dangerous against somebody that wants to play on the inside like that, wants to sort of shape up to shoot like that. But I think from the point in which we did have, we did go down to 10 men, we just needed somebody to try to take risks. And I think Hayden Hackney did that. And yeah, he was probably the one player in the middle of the park that was brave when we needed somebody to be brave. And it's just a shame that when he drove at the Sunderland defence and unleashed that shot, that they didn't go into the top corner, because that would have been something pretty special. But yeah, for me, I think Hayden Hackney, and also I thought Daryl Enahan was good and made some vital interceptions in that first half. I'm really, really happy that he was back, because I genuinely thought that he'd be out, and he'd be out for a considerable amount of time. And so Carrick kept that card very, very close to his chest. But yeah, I'm happy with Lenahan being back. So them two for me, Lenahan and Hackney in the present players.
And I'm going to round it off and say Archer, I think. And it's the reason why I've said BTEC praise and place, because, you know, he didn't do a million things right, but I thought he showed a lot of glimpses in the game against Sunderland today. And, you know, it shows what he can bring to this side now in terms of that right-hand side of playing more centrally. You know, good feet, likes to get in behind and can create chances. You know, we do look a bit more fluid in those attacking moments with him on the pitch, and from what I've seen today anyway, and rather being a bit more static, which we see with Crooks up top. But we'll move on to questions in a moment, but I just want to give a little push to our Borough Breakdown shirt, which Danny, you are rocking at the moment. It is £30. It is only available till the
31st. I'm pointing over here, that's not where the badge is. Sorry.
Who was the footballer that did that? Was it Kieran Trippier? Yes, he doesn't point at the badge. Danny Moore is still a Kieran Trippier. So if you're watching us on YouTube, you will absolutely love that moment. But if you listen to us on your podcast provider, I'd advise you to just quickly press pause, come onto the YouTube bit, search for about 34, 35 minutes in the middle of that, and you'll
please
see
don't.
That. But anyway, this shirt, it is £30. It is only available till the 31st of January, and then it is disappearing for good. You'll never, ever be able to get this shirt ever again. So now is your chance. Anyway, and we've also got some merch as well on the T-Side website as well. It's t-side.co.uk. And then if you look at the Borough Breakdown podcast section, you'll find a load of merch, which includes the Malt Curse, which cursed us again today. And we didn't even mention it on the podcast last week. And we've got
don't
a lot of stuff
talk about it
on there. But all of the proceeds and the sales go 100% goes to the Motor Neurone Disease Association and helping us reach our target of £3,000. But let's move on to questions now, because each week you get to send us your questions via email, theboroughbreakdown@hotmail.com. You can join our Telegram chat with over 300 Borough fans on everything but Borough, or you can just tweet us at @Borough_breakdown and give us some aggro. Anyway, so the first question, it comes from Rob. He says, defensively undone by a few simple long balls, how can we improve our defence but maintain our attacking threat? Tom Green, would you like to answer this one? Is he still there?
I would once I figure out how to unmute myself and figure out where my mouse had gone. To be honest, before the game, that was something I really wasn't looking forward to us going up against. I don't think Fry and Lenahan are necessarily blessed with pace, and they were showing like a highlight reel of a lot of Stewart's goals right before the match started, and a lot of them were from long balls over the top, him running onto it and getting the finish. And I don't think we did deal with that well. We played an all right offside trap at times, but maybe this was the type of game to sit a little bit deeper and not allow so much space in behind. I know we're trying to play a certain way, And as we've said in the past, like, you know, after the game against Brighton, it is important for us to play in this way. But I don't think the height of the defensive line should necessarily be always that strict, that we're always playing such a high line. I think if we are going up against a striker like Ross Stewart, where, you know, everything in this highlight reel was balls over the top of him and him running onto him, then, yeah, just sit a little bit deeper for that game, maybe.
Oh, they matter in there, and I'll mute myself. Next question, then, it's from Dan, and he says, do you think we need more pace at the back? Fry got caught out for pace, and the only player in the back four with pace was Ryan Giles. Also, do you think we need a CDM in this window? Because Housen was looking leggy. Denimal, you can take this one. Two-parter, of course. Do you think we need a bit more pace? And two, do you think we'll get a CDM this window?
I don't think we need more pace because, remember, Forrest got promoted last season. Who were their back three? Joel Worrell, Steve Cook and Tobias Figueiredo. So, you know, they're not blessed with pace. You can get promoted without it. I think you've just got to be able to defend the space better. And I think before we talk about reacting to long balls, it's about preventing them. And I think Borough just struggled to do that. Borough struggled to maybe press on Sun a little bit and to limit their key attackers and their key ball players. And I think that's probably the thing that I'd be looking at, because Dale Fry and Darryl Lenihan are good defenders in their own right. And yes, we probably will get caught in behind a few more times this season. But again, I think it's just about how you stop that supply before you're really tasked with responding to it. So I don't think we need it. It would be nice. Don't get me wrong. It would be nice to have pace, but I wouldn't bring in a defender just for the sake of pace. And then the question about a defensive midfield player, potentially, but I think there's kind of loose roles in that midfield. I don't really think we have a defensive midfielder, really. I think we're probably looking at that because Housen has played in that position before, but the way that he plays is very, I guess, fluid in his movement and being able to, again, like we've said before, take the ball in the half turn, being able to receive the ball from these dangerous, in, you know, my quotation air marks there, balls from Stefan. But I think we could do with Barlasser, who we've been strongly linked with, but you know, somebody that can play a line breaking pass, a little bit more of a assist potential from the central areas, because he is on 7 assists this season, which I believe is tied with Ryan Giles now. So yeah, he's a creative influence, but he's not really the most mobile, so we probably need a little bit more sort of legs in that midfield, I guess. They're talking about not needing pace in defence. You know, we need pace in midfield. But yeah, I think we'll probably get another option in midfield. And if it is Dan Barlasser, then that's a very, very good signing.
Do you want to give him a little plea, Denham, before we move on to the next question to Dan? You know, he might be listening. He might be going, you know what, I fancy a bit of Teesside. Do you want to give him a little plea or shall I just move on?
Just one word. Palmer. That's all we need, right? Okay. We all need a Palmer.
So, Dan, if you're listening, the word is Palmer. So just please arrive, because we're desperate for sentiments, apparently. Anyway, moving swiftly on to the next question from Mike. He says, is it time to ditch Crooks up top, Fizz? I'm a fan of what he brings, but we have a natural striker in Cameron Archer. He will only get better with more starts and get his goal contributions. Tom, I feel like we see this question all the time, but then Crooks ends up scoring with like a branch or something, doesn't he? And, you know, we end up winning. But what do you think? Stop this Crooks up front and then give Archer his chance?
I think it could be worth giving Archer a chance in the next game. I think, you know, he's been working up to it, getting kind of longer and longer since in games. And Crooks didn't score today. Did we play last week, Millwall? Was forced to score then, so yeah, I'm just forgetting everything about football at the moment, mate. But I'm not living in the past anymore. But he's not scored the last couple of games. I think the last time anyone kind of said this was when he got two in the second half against Birmingham. So I think maybe we've been kind of like warming Archer up to that point to get him to play a full 90 minutes or, you know, somewhere close to that. I did think today we could have done with him on maybe a little bit earlier. So, yeah, I'd be in favour of Archer in for Watford.
I think if we look at Watford's team as well, look at their defence, their centre-back pairing in the last game against Rotherham was Cathcart and Sierra-Elta, who I don't think they're marked for being particularly quick, again, on the theme of slow centre-halves. But he will stretch a team, Cameron Archer, and I do think now is probably the time to start to try to get him up to speed, because he did hit the ground running at Preston. Hasn't quite been the case at Borough because he's had those cameo appearances. I would like to see a lot more from him, and I would like to see him from the off. So I think Watford could be the prime opportunity to play him from the off. And plus, I think our intel from our Watford fan Luke was that he was pretty close to signing for them in the summer, so there's that little narrative there to add to the game. So I would like to see more of Cameron Archer for sure.
And it's not the last you'll hear of Luke in this podcast, because I got some info from earlier. But in terms of the Archer, yeah, like, he could maybe play on the right-hand side for where Force has been. You know, I think even though Force has been effective on that right-hand side, I did think when Archer came on today and played in that role, he was really good at times. And, you know, who knows? Let's see. I think if Archer and Crooks, you know, played together, we'd have all the tree memes in the world, really. You know, like archery and trees that are scored together, you know.
But Tom's
just disgusted with that reference. But I've got the two final questions here. I like hearted. And Joe says, will Fry be commentating during the suspension? Obviously, that I was alluding to Luke 09 today, telling me about a four minute monologue on how crap Ross Stewart is at golf. Would you like to see Dale Fry commentating on Sky Sports in the next couple of games?
Hopefully. I mean, Jesus Christ. Listen, I'm usually someone that will try to suppress. I know I do whinge a lot, but I'll try to suppress my like whinginess if I can. But my God, that was taking the piss today. Like, my dad was like, oh, that's Don Goodman, is there? I was like, yeah. He's ex-Sunderland as well, he said. And it clicked in me. I remembered. So you've got ex-Sunderland, current Sunderland. I won't be surprised if Daniel Mann, the main commentator, was a bloody Sunderland fan. It was absolutely ridiculous.
It was. I know you're watching Sky. It was rubbish.
Yeah, don't do that again, please.
Yeah, please don't do that again. You know, but oh well. And the final question, Tom, I'm going to leave it with you, because I'm very intrigued at what your answer is going to be. And we've never really discussed it on and off the podcast. So, but Brad asks us, garlic on a Palmo itself or off to the side? Now, I'm very intrigued by your answer. There is an answer. There is a right answer to this, but
I'm very convinced there's a right answer to this. And as someone who had a Manjaro's on Friday, I have to say, off to the side. You can't pour it all over a Palmo.
I agree. You know, I agree. I think that is a resounding yes from me and from Dana.
We'll let Dan Barlas know about that, won't we?
Yeah, we'll let him know. Dan, you've got to put the garlic on the side, you know. And I didn't know that Jed Spence scored for Spurs, Tom. Yeah, I didn't know we were getting a Manjaro these days.
I think it's a belated one for probably when he scored in training when he was a Borough or something. But
yeah, it's true. I mean, but yes, to get an appearance first. I think we're just going to have to lower the barrier now. If Jed plays a minute, we go to Manjaro's for Spurs. Oh, poor Jed. Not living up in Spurs. But you know what? You'll never know. He might go on loan somewhere. Who knows? But anyway, let's move on to Watford then, because I did speak to our resident Watford fan, and he's in the Borough Breakdown podcast Telegram chat. And I said, Luke, give me some info on Watford, because you change manager every 3 weeks. So I just keep losing track of how he's played at the moment, but Slaven Bilic is still in charge. And they are playing a 3-5-2 at the moment due to injuries, and they are counter-attacking sides. And Luke says they changed to a 4-2-3-1 in the second half against Blackpool, and they started it against Rotherham, which they drew 1-1 and let me down for £400. So thank you very much for that, Slaven Bilic. So they are compact out of possession. And they are narrow in possession as well, so they use the fullbacks to try and get forward. But they're not playing very well at the moment, but they are getting results. And he expects that Davis Kayambe And a couple of signings could be in for the trip to the Riverside. So a team that's not playing well but getting results, that's a very cliche of a team that's going to probably get promoted in the end of the season. It's those teams, you know, if you're not playing well, it's a sign of a good side. It's always what Don Goodman always says when we talk about Sunderland, even though they're not playing. But anyway, Tom, how are you feeling about this game? Because it's a six-pointer, as people would probably say. It could be in the football, a cliche world.
No easy game in football, Johnny.
No easy games in football. Tom, how are you feeling about it?
Well, you know what? I mean, before today's game, they let me down for £88 yesterday, so I was really hoping we'd batter them. And now I really, you know, that's my lifelong dream now, just us battering Wofford at the Riverside. Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough game. I couldn't quite figure out yesterday because they were the one team I still needed on my bet. So I was watching the kind of, the overview of the pitch and the little 2D things just to see if they were looking likely to score. And it didn't seem like they could get out of their half. And I was like, I don't know if this means Wofford are terrible or Rotherham are just really good and really high-pressing. But yeah, they just... I mean, I can't really take too much from that, but they haven't looked particularly great when I've seen them. I did think they were a bit lucky against us earlier in the season. It's very unlucky from Rodrigo Muniz not to score from 60 yards, but at least he tried.
Don't trigger me, Tom.
But I would hope the home advantage would make all the difference next week, and I want to see a rebound from the result today. So yeah, I'm hoping for a Borough win. Maybe go 2-1. I reckon, you know, goal in it at half time. They change manager at half time, and it ends up as winning 2-1.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past Watford at this rate. Dana, how are you feeling about it? Because it's a really difficult game, right? Got abundance of quality.
It is. I don't know. I think I'm glad that it's at home because, as we discussed, I think, was it last podcast? We do not have a good record at Vicarage Road. Last time that we won there was 2012. So I wouldn't be confident if it was there. But I think because we're at home, there's just a certain comfort about being at the Riverside. Even when we lose, I'm just like, it's fine, we're at the Riverside. We'll be fine. But I'm hoping that we can bounce back because it seems like Carrick is incredibly level-headed and I don't think he'll let this defeat derail our season. Although it does have the potential to. I will say, I don't want to sound like a bedwetter, but, you know, January and February are quite precarious months because I feel like the pressure of a playoff battle does sort of start to crank up a little bit. And, you know, it's a very, very difficult game against the Watford side who, yes, they might not be playing well, but they have the players to be able to win a football match. And, you know, that's incredibly difficult, even without João Pedro, who I think is the best player in the division. So I think it's difficult. I will say I'm not mentioning a single start or that I've seen a single start because somebody said to mention the cursed start last week. It was that Sunderland haven't kept a clean sheet in 7 games. So there we go, Sunderland. Well done on your clean sheet. I hope you're happy.
Thank you, Denimal, for your curse of the week for Sunderland as well. So, I mean, it was the reason why I didn't say it. I just knew it was going to happen. I should have probably put it on, but I didn't. And Sunderland did one over on us. So please, I hope you haven't got a fact for us today, Dana, because I just can't bear it anymore.
I've got one, which I could sort of like reverse on us
I can't do it.
It's not worth the risk.
It's not worth it, you know. It's just really not worth it. I'm sick of being cursed on this podcast. Been going for nearly 5 years and you curse us every week. And no wonder we haven't been promoted since we've been doing this podcast. Because you keep cursing us. I'm going to go with a Desmond. I'm going to go 2-2 draw. I think it'd be a really difficult game for both teams. You know, there's no easy games in this league as a cliche. But I actually genuinely think that they're going to come to the Riverside. And you know what? I'm going to say Watford are going to go 2-0 up and we're going to bring it back and draw 2-2, and then we'll miss a chance at the end to win it, but we don't, which is a really sad way to end this podcast.
I'm really hoping that the bullet curse doesn't exist here.
You're lucky that ain't coming out of my mouth.
Yeah, I know, but I hope not cursed either. So you never know, this could actually happen. But then if it does happen, people are going to go, Johnny, why the hell did you say that on this podcast? Like, we missed a glorious chance from 2 yards. But guys, thank you very much for joining me as always. And to listeners and the viewers, thank you very much for watching us and listening to us on your podcast provider and on YouTube. But Borough, we're lost in the darkness at the Stadium of Light. But this has been the Borough Breakdown podcast. And that was why a Borough Mash Day chatter in a pod. The Borough Breakdown.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.